Blog Talk Radio.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is his messenger. I further bear witness that the Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan is our divine reminder, confidant, warner, leader, teacher, and guide in our midst, and it is my distinct honor, privilege, and pleasure to greet all of you in our nation's greeting words of peace. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa-alaykum as-salam, ma'am.
Thank you, thank you. And welcome to Nation Building Movement Network. And, of course, it is my distinct honor, privilege, and pleasure once again to present to you our beloved host, our little sister queen, Sister Yatira TTX. As-salamu alaykum, ma'am.
Wa alaykum as-salam, ma'am. All praise is due to Allah.
And listen, Sister Ayapo, I think it's Sister Ayapo, I was getting some background noise from you. I don't know if you're outside or something like that, but can you hear us?
I can hear everyone fine. Can you guys hear me now? Because I'm inside.
Okay. Okay, yes. I don't hear that noise anymore. So, yes, ma'am. Thank you so very much. Okay, Sister Yatir, take it away.
Yes, ma'am. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness there is no God but Allah, who appeared in the person of Master Prophet Muhammad. And I further bear witness that the most honorable Elijah Muhammad is his exalted Christ. And here amongst us today, with Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan in our midst as our divine reminder and warner, and I'd like to greet you in these three holy names and the greeting words of peace of Assalamu Alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, ma'am.
Oh, thank you all for being on the show today and for all of our listeners tuning in. Our topic of discussion today is the struggles for black women here in America for freedom, justice, and equality. And I just want to take the time really quick and introduce our panelists. We have Sister Ayapo.
Peace. This is Ayapo, Moyende, and Gina.
Yes, ma'am. If you could just go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay.
Well, again, my name is Ayapo Moyende Ngina. I live in Tampa, Florida, by way of Birmingham, Alabama. And I've been here in Florida now about 13 years, actually longer than that, but I've been a political organizer in the Tampa Bay area for about 13 years. And my background as a political organizer is with the Uhuru Movement, the African People's Socialist Party, St. Pete. So I'm no longer a member of that organization. I still do political work, particularly around the question of health in the African community. I'll actually be graduating here in about 5 months, and I'll be a doctor of Oriental medicine. So that's pretty much my background.
Wow. I mean, that's a very busy background. Fun background. Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much for that. And we have Brother Khalid.
Assalamu alaikum. Yes, sir.
Well, Islam, sir. If you can just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Khalid Rashid. I'm from Kansas City, Missouri. I have a background, like I said, I have a CEO of various different companies, Energy Drink, founding editor of the Post, the magazine. I have a female clothing line, a male clothing line, and it's various different things. I'm a big activist in the community, you know what I'm saying? I stand and represent the Deen of Islam wholeheartedly, and it's a pleasure to be amongst, you know what I'm saying, my people. Most importantly, my beautiful black sisters, though. So this is an honor and privilege for me, though, as well as being amongst you guys, too.
Yes, sir. All praise is due to Allah. Thank you so much for being here and being present. And like Queen mentioned earlier, for, you know, being strong enough to be on the panelists with all these women. And, I didn't get your name the last, sister.
Sister Sudan. Oh, yes,
Sudan.
Ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam.
If you would just take the time and introduce yourself for us all, please, ma'am.
Okay. Well, my name is Sister Sudan Muhammad, born and raised in the Nation of Islam. Proud to say that I am of the third generation. My grandparents they joined in the 50s, 1956. My father, he joined in 1953, and I'm the third generation, and my children are the fourth. We have a magazine out here in the Washington metropolitan area called Youth Creation Community Outreach, and my husband and I and my family, along with some great believers and friends, we have really been doing some wonderful things in the community, actually for the last 15 years. We have a program called Bedside Heart, where my children and I actually started with my daughter since 2004. We learned about this program where this Caucasian woman in the Midwest was going into hospitals and playing a harp to sick patients. And the harp is a beautiful healing instrument. I could say a lot about that. But we take the harp to our people in the community who cannot afford a harpist, and we go to their homes when they're sick and, you know, they're ill. My children play at their bedside. They have played for cancer patients, people who were transitioning out of this world, making their transition peaceful as they were leaving. So that's just part of some of the things that we would, you know, that we are part of. Our praises due to Allah.
I was just saying the panelists here tonight are very powerful people. Everybody has this, you know, a powerful background, and, you know, everybody's doing something that's really making some moves. So I'll praise you a lot for that. And let's just jump right into the topic tonight, because I know it's really big, and, oh, my goodness, this topic, like, you know, me and my sister were speaking earlier about it, this could be broken down into 6-7 different shows.
Yeah.
So, okay, I'm just going to start with Sister Iyapo, and my first question to you, Queen, is what does the struggle for you mean, you know, being a black woman here in America? What does the struggle mean for you?
Well, I feel like as a African woman, I should just give you a little, you know, more personal background. I came into consciousness at the age of 25 years old. I met the Uhuru movement when I was 25, and for all intensive purposes, I was as backwards as an African can be in this society. And what I mean by that is when I met the Uhuru movement, I was strung out on drugs. I was messing around with white men. You know, I had a whole loaded host of contradictions when I came into my own consciousness of who I was as an African woman in a world ruled by white people. And, you know, when I first started learning about who I was as an African, the first thing that I felt was rage. You know, I felt like I had been robbed for 25 years, that everything that I ever thought I knew about the world was a lie that had been filtered to me through the eyes of the white world. And it took a very, very long time for me to progress from this place of rage to action, you know? And to be able to learn the distinction between rage and righteous indignation. Do you know what I mean? And so for African women, one of the platforms of the 14-point platform of the African People's Socialist Party is basically we believe we are opposed. This is a paraphrase, but basically the platform states we are opposed to the special oppression of African women and believe that African women should be equal makers and shapers of human history, right?
Right.
And as an organizer, even within, you know, the African Liberation Movement, though there is a lot of lip service paid to respect for African women, respect for African women's role in the movement, my experience has been more often than not, it is just what I said, lip service, and that does not play out in the work itself. That equality of African women being able to equally participate in their own liberation struggle within the confines of the African Liberation Movement don't exist in the real world in a lot of organizations and a lot of work that would be considered progressive. And then it just became more and more frustrating because I wasn't politically astute enough to even understand what it was I was witnessing. I always turned in on myself as if, you know, what I was experiencing and the frustrations that I was experiencing as a female doing this work was somehow indicative of weaknesses inherent in me as an African woman, not contradictions that existed within, you know, political organization itself. And we can't separate political organization or African people making a liberation struggle from the society that we exist in, you know, in whole. The fact of the matter is we live in a white male patriarchal society that has an absolute hatred of women, and that any gains that women have made in the past 50 years or so have still been made within that confound, that even if women get a few, you know, overall, women in general, get a few little liberties, that those liberties still exist within a society that has a hatred for women in general and a complete disdain for black women in particular.
Wow, yes, ma'am. I mean, that's a real struggle. And kudos to you for you to be able to turn rage, like you said, into action, because, you know, or action, and let me say that in a positive way, because, you know, you, a lot of people can be angry and turn their and act on their anger and be, you know, in it being a destructive way or, you know, non-productive way. But for you to take that anger and say, you know, that made me upset, and now I'm going to do something about it, that, you know, I'm regaining my power. I'm regaining control. So, you know, kudos to you for that, Queen, and all praises due to Allah. And, again, you mentioned something about, you know, based to me, what I just received, people just don't want to face the facts. You know, that's the reality is what you just stated. You know, that's the reality of society, but, you know, people choose to, but it's just that. They don't want to face it or, you know, call it what they want and just ignore it. So, yes, ma'am. I mean, that's a true struggle.
Well, I think a part of what you're saying, sister, is not just people not wanting to face the facts. I, as I'm sure, you know, many of you within the nation realize and understand and haven't taken on the responsibility to produce your own media, is that all of us, no matter who we are, no matter what color we are born into a society that breeds contempt for our people, breeds contempt for African women in particular. And so, you know, it's not just white people who have this disdain for African women. It's African men, it's African women, it's African children. Because the media really helps to perpetuate from the time we're born to the time we die these negative stereotypes, this disdain, this putting forward of the white woman as the epitome of what it is to be a woman, and that if she is the epitome of female, then African woman is some mutant, you know, that is less than any other woman because she's the exact opposite of African, of the white woman. So I think it's not just people not wanting to face the facts. We have to consider the fact that the great majority of people in this country, no matter what color they are, have been, you know, bamboozled the way that we have. I mean, I didn't come out the womb conscious. I was just as backwards as the next person. I was 25 years old when I regained control of my brain. You know what I'm saying? And so it's not enough. And the other thing is the question of rage. If you want to understand what is happening to our people, it is the inability to transform that rage, because we all are walking around knowing that something is wrong, knowing that something has happened to us, knowing that something is wrong, and not having, you know, enough information to articulate that rage in a way that, you know, is productive and can help move us forward as a group. So whether it's the, you know, the young black girl or the young black guy who's a teen, who's 13 or 14 years old, who's acting up in school or robbing people or whatever, all of that is an expression of this rage that they can't articulate.
Yes, ma'am.
I believe.
I agree. Yes, ma'am. You're absolutely correct. Thank you for that. This is Sudan.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. And for you. What does struggle mean for you?
Well, sister, I have to give the sister who spoke, you said a mouthful, in this male-dominated, sexist society where it's so racism. Dick Gregory said something, and I have to say, I'm not saying anything against the movies, 12 Years a Slave or Django. He said the trick is they keep you looking backwards and not looking at racism today and what's happening. They keep you looking backwards at something that happened back then, and look what's going on now. Here's an example. They have all these reality shows, Basketball Wives, and all this crap. So now you see in our community, all these beauty supply stores popping up. So now black women are so fixed on spending $500 to $1,000 on hair weave, but they so messed up from the television because it became their reality, where they go to the Dollar Tree and buy groceries. So you're more concerned about your false eyelashes and the hair weave, and you're feeding your child oodles and noodles. So what we decided to do was, I invite women in my home. I teach them how to make bean soup. I teach them how to make bread. I teach them how to make muffins because I thank Allah for the foundation that was laid out for me. So I'll come in and I'll teach them. And I'm blessed, and, you know, by the grace of God. I heard Sister Ava Muhammad say something so powerful. She said leadership is not limited to a couple of people that you look to, but leadership is ordained among the conscious, those who are woke. And the minister gave us something so powerful, a powerful tool called study guide, self-improvement, the basis for community development. When I read that and I digested that, I started a magazine called Youth Creation Community Outreach. And in it, people who will deny the final call and say that they don't want it out here in Washington, D.C., where you find most, hey, you come out here, even the bums are intelligent. I'm telling you. This place is unique out here. I take tidbits of the teachings, the articles, and I put a beautiful cover on the front cover, but it's Islam. It's the teachings. It's high consciousness. It's black history. It's doing for yourself. And I've been successful with doing that from taking just taking a little bit of the teaching. And I'm so thankful, I'm so full, but the sister before me said so much, and I thank you, sister. I really thank you for everything that you said. You cover so much.
Thank you, sister.
I'll praise you for a lot. Both of you said a lot, and I appreciate both of you. So thank you, Sister Sudan. Thank you, Sister Ayapo. Brother Khalid?
Yes,
now,
sir.
This struggle... You are a black man. So my question is a little different for you, but I want to know from a male's perspective, you know, what have you been able to see? What can you see, you know, for the struggle of, you know, black women?
It's basically kind of what the first and the second sister said, that the images right now portrayed about women is just really, it's kind of sad though. It's really, really no substance there. A lot of them really don't know they self-worth. They kind of wrapped up like in this entertainment businesses, not for us, with reality TV, but also with the music too. You know, it play a key part. That, you know, these signs and symbols that they show as far as demonic things and stuff like that, Luciferian signals that they show, these people kind of idolize these people. They kind of put them up on a pedestal. You know, they don't look at them as regular people. They go off of what they say. That's like words that was given, like, you know, saying that was ordained. You know what I'm saying? That was in the Quran or in the Bible or something like that, where they say goes and nothing else really matters. Also, this internet age that we live in plays a key part too, though. You know what I'm saying? That's all that you see everywhere you go, that the people are just glued to their cell phones. That's all you constantly see is people on their cell phones. You know, it's a Facebook, a Twitter, Instagram, or anything. You know, and they use the words to ratchet, to turn up. You know, this twerking and all this thing. This movement that's going on. You know what I'm saying? Like it's just something happening, you know what I'm saying? That's just something to do, you know what I'm saying? And it's really sad, and that our women don't want to kind of learn stuff like that. Like I said, when I you know, because you know I'm you know Islam, so you know I spoke with you earlier, though, you know what I'm saying? You know, she gonna get with me, she gonna get some Islam, you know what I'm saying? It's two eyes, it's Islam and English, so I'm gonna choose Islam. So she know that, you know what I'm saying? When you kind of explain that to a woman, they like, well, I'm not about to be submissive. I don't know what that means. They kind of laugh at that. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, this whole independent woman thing that came out. And don't get me wrong, we all supposed to have our identity and self-worth and know what we're supposed to do. But for a woman to get up, you know what I'm saying, like I said, when the month of Ramadan was going on, you know what I'm saying, they were saying that, like, well, what you do that for? Well, why is that? You know what I'm saying? They laugh or, you know what I'm saying, you get ridiculed for that type of thing, and they're not understanding that. And obviously those that say that they're not able to do that, they're not strong for that because it takes a special type of person to do that. Like a sister said, she came into consciousness of that, though. You know what I'm saying? It was not, even though it was 25 years, it was right on time. It's nothing that was late, though. It's, when you get it, though, it's right on time. It's nothing ever too late. Even if it was you set the consciousness on your deathbed, you know what I'm saying, and stuff like that. When you got it, you came right on time, though. You know what I'm saying? Out of grace, you know what I'm saying, and mercy.
Right.
But yeah, it is a constant struggle, though. You know what I'm saying? Because you know what I'm saying, what you fight up against, though. You know what I'm saying? Just like when the sister said, from the images that you see, as soon as the news come on, first of all, I know the news come on. Like here, 4 o'clock in the morning, everything that you see, the images, you know what I'm saying, the blacks is just ridiculous all throughout the day. You know what I'm saying? Not through local, CNN, everything. You know what I'm saying? Then you turn on the TV shows, the Maury, the Bills, and all them, everything. You know what I'm saying? That's all they show you. You know
right.
what I'm saying? It is images. That's all that you see is black folks. They might have some, you know, some Europeans on there, but they might say them for last. But the, you
right.
know, the first thing you're going to see is some images of some black people, and then a woman going, oh, such and such, and then she called the N-word, the MF, and all this, and you know what I'm saying, all that type of stuff. And it was just really sad, you know what I'm saying, that you know, you had to see those type of things. And it grieves my spirit, you know what I'm saying, that I had to see this, you know what I'm saying, because, you know what I'm saying, I was one of those kids, like I said, that, you know what I'm saying, being that, you know what I'm saying, it was a mother, it was a lot of men, you know, in and out, you know what I'm saying, out the household and stuff of that nature, though, you know what I'm saying, since my father left. So, you know what I'm saying, like the sister said, those images that you had to say, because I was one of those kids, you know, like I said, when 13, 14, I was out there, you know what I'm saying, did a lot of things, you know what I'm saying, like I said, I was been incarcerated, you know what I'm saying, stuff like that, though, too, though. So, I mean, I address these issues in autobiography that I got coming out and stuff like that to kind of give people a better understanding, though, you know what I'm saying, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, I talk to the kids and the youth and stuff, but, you know, so they can understand what happened with the struggle I went through, and, you know what I'm saying, how, you know what I'm saying, saved me and brought me to the consciousness, though. But yeah, it's really, you know what I'm saying, I like I said, I wish I could save everybody, but I also, you know, I let sisters know what's going on, you know what I'm saying, that you don't have to do that. It's another way to go, but if they choose not to get it, I mean, I just did my part. I just, you know what I'm saying, drive to see them, you know what I'm saying, what Allah told me to do. You know, I was obedient to what I had to say and I had to act on it, and that's what I did.
Yes, I'm pretty good to Allah. Thank you, Brother Khaled. And I just want to, you know, agree with a lot of what you said, you know, everything you said. And just as a, you know, a young woman, I know that, you know, for me, a lot of struggles just growing up is the examples, the role models. And, I mean, not that from the 90s to now. For me, TV has changed a lot. But, you know, it's just that I didn't have, you know, a lot to look up to and like, see what I can be, you know, when I get older, what I want to be. It wasn't like, you know, how for the white race, you know, they have a lot of everything. You know, we get in the history class, you know, there's all the presidents and everything that's in history is just like, you know, white conquers all. Everything's just about, you know, but for all I knew was, you know, my history is I was just a slave. That's all I know about me before. And, you know, what is my future, you know, being... I think that's a big struggle that, you know, for me is just where am I going? What am I supposed to do? Where am I supposed to be? You know, what is my life supposed to be like? Because there was nothing for me to look up to or please to look at. And, you know, don't get me wrong, you know, my mother is great. My mother is great. She raised me to be the woman that I am, and I thank Allah for her. And, you know, and I think that's kind of, I know that's why, you know, she's really guided me to how I am and how I carry myself and all those things. But, you know, just as far as when I'm not around my mother, you know, when I'm watching TV, when I'm at school, when I'm out and about, when I'm, you know, seeing advertisements, who is in my face? So, you know, I just feel like that's a really big struggle that, you know, my generation, I know for sure, that we deal with. So I just want to thank you all for your responses. Yes, ma'am.
a bit, you know, a lot's been said, and, you know, I just want to, you know, just say a couple of things, because everybody has, you know, said a lot, and it just helps us to understand how big and how deep the issue is. One thing I mentioned was about the special oppression of African women. And I feel like it's important for me to clarify that and give, like, some history about what I mean by this whole concept of the special oppression of African women. And you know, depending upon where you go in the world, this special oppression exists for all women of color, right? These conditions that exist as, you know, as white people rule the world, these conditions that, you know, the group face as a whole, living under these oppressive conditions under white domination or white power, right, that the group experiences this collective oppressive condition, right? And within both groups, within both dynamics, within the white ruling nation and within the group that's oppressed, there exists, you know, contradictions even within the group, right? And so for us as an oppressed group living in a white-dominated world, we experience as African people the daily struggles of living as, you know, oppressed people. And within our group as oppressed people, we experience a whole nother set of circumstances. And as African women, the reason we call it special oppression is because not only do we deal with the burden of being black in America, but we deal with the burden of being female in a misogynistic society or a patriarchal society. So, you know, in essence, we get this kind of double whammy, you know, of the state of oppression. And mm-hmm. It's important to mention that because it manifests itself in a thousand different ways. The brother mentioned some of the ways when I talk about the disdain for African women, I'm not just talking about people outside the group hating on African women. I'm talking about African women hating to look at themselves in the mirror. I'm talking about African women having this instinctive distrust of African women. It's all a part of this foul, you know, system that portrays African women as the worst thing that has ever happened to humanity. And it's important to talk in real-world terms about what special oppression means, because otherwise we'll be engaged in a lot of conversations that I hear often that don't get to or speak to the heart of why African women have a right to be able to struggle within the African liberation movement as a whole for their place as women. Because the fact of the matter is the statistics tell us that special oppression of African women isn't just, you know, girls having sex too young or having babies too young or the kind of socially unacceptable behavior that young girls may sometimes exhibit in this society, you know, being influenced by BET and all the coon shows that exist on TV. But even that is a symptom of a deeper issue. And one of those things, obviously, is abuse of women in this society that is really widely accepted. One out of every three women in this country, the United States, ranks number two in the world for crimes against women, for rape, right? And the United States only ranks behind India. In this country that claims to be so progressive, right, that claims to be the champion of democracy and going about the world and imposing itself on everyone else, ranks number two in the world for rape statistics, that one in every three women born in this country will be a victim of molestation or rape in her lifetime, right? Mm. That leading cause of death of a woman in America, the leading cause of death for a pregnant woman, the leading cause of death for a pregnant woman in America is death by her spouse. The leading cause of death, not postpartum hemorrhaging, not complications due to pregnancy, the leading cause of death of pregnant women in America is death by her spouse.
Mm-hmm.
82% of women, black women, who are killed during pregnancy are killed by their spouses, their partners, or their husbands.
Mm.
So, you know, and the thing is women in particular have to be very, very careful about how they frame the discussion, because what I have noticed, even with my own husband, is African men are quick to become defensive even in the face of those statistics. But if those statistics don't apply to the man themselves, then it behooves the African man to become the champion for the cause of African women. And it's so important, because the question of gender becomes more divisive than the question of race if the intention behind the struggle is not honest. You understand what I'm saying? I know a trillion good brothers, and I think that even with my own relationship with my husband, the reason that I have been told that I can be somewhat difficult to deal with is because I had an awesome example of what a man should be in my father, in my uncles, in my grandfathers. You know what I'm saying? And so for me to settle for less than what my dad was. For me to settle for less than what my grandfather was as a man is unacceptable.
Right.
So for me, I feel like when a woman begins to raise very real struggle, very righteous struggle about the conditions of African women in the world, especially in this country, by talking about the question of, like, human trafficking and how black children are the ones that are sought after most to be turned out into prostitution and child pornography and things like that, or one in three women being raped or molested in her life, and increasingly young boys, one in eight boys under the age of 12 will be molested in their lifetime in this country.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, and even as the question of women and children in general is concerned, worldwide there are 6 billion people, three-fourths of them, there's 6 billion people, three-fourths of the world's population lives on less than $2 a day, and 80% of the people who are the most impoverished on the world are women and children. It is a real foundational struggle that we're raising when we talk about uplifting African women to their rightful place as participants in this struggle. And the fact of the matter is it shouldn't be hard for African men or African women to get on board with that when we take a look at our own history. We can
right.
look at our history. I used to say earlier about being kind of demoralized by our history because, you know, all we hear about is that we were slaves and we didn't really contribute anything or whatever. But I think the thing that we have to our advantage now is the fact that we live in the information age, and that information, that can't be the excuse anymore, because everything is at the tip of our fingers. If we want to know anything about where African people come from now, we don't have to do a lot of research. We can sit on the computer for 20 minutes and learn about every great African woman who led battle, against foreign occupation on the continent of Africa. You can learn that in 20 minutes. You know, so those of us who become conscious and those of us who are women and become conscious have more of a responsibility to do our homework, to do our studies, which is one thing that I have noticed is a weakness in women who come into consciousness, is because we are women, and most of us are mothers or potential mothers. A lot of the time, the daily struggles of providing, you know, the necessities of food, clothes, and shelter, the creation and recreation of real life for our children, makes it difficult for us to do the kind of serious study, the serious analytical, study that is required of our history to help us understand how to move ourselves forward in the work, how to be effective women in society, how to be mothers, how to raise our children appropriately, at the same time being able to fulfill our place in our own liberation struggle. So it's a really loaded question, but I feel like one of the things the sister said earlier was that the brother was brave for being on the show. I feel like this is a discussion that men have to have among men, because in our society, in the society that we live in now, and it's not a criticism of anybody, it is just how social groups work. A woman can say something to a woman, and those sisters will hear that differently than if a man said the exact same thing to that group of women. The women might get upset. You know what I mean? And it's the same way with men. When we're having a conversation about the oppression of African women, I can say something to a group of women, and the women be like, you know, that's so right. You know, sister, that's right on, blah, 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 blah. But a brother can come and say the exact same thing. Oh, or I could, better yet, I could say the exact same thing to a group of brothers, and they'll get hot. They'll want a battle. You know what I mean? They want a struggle.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if not one African in that room that I spoke to has done any of the things or participated in any of the activities I highlight as those things that African men can do to be oppressive to African women, they automatically feel the need to defend the group, even if they're opposed to that behavior themselves, right?
Mm.
And so even with my husband, I used to challenge him all the time. You know, when we have these struggles at our home, and these are political struggles. I don't mean struggles in a bad way. I mean it's good to struggle to work out wrong ideas so that we have a correct analysis about who we are in the world. So when I say struggle, I don't mean in a bad way. But even when me and my husband would have these struggles in our own home, you know, I would have to tell him, you know, the fact of the matter is, Ajamu, is when we have these kind of conversations and you come away from the conversations with a different kind of understanding, because now you're not guarded, now you don't feel like you have to defend yourself, or you don't feel like I'm attacking you when I raise the question of the oppression of African women in with regard to our partners or with regards to African men in general, you don't feel like you have to be defensive. Now you can be able to take that conversation to other brothers, and they can hear it coming from you much better than they could hear it coming from me. That's not to say that it's right, but it is to acknowledge that these social dynamics do exist, and that African men who believe in, who believe that women, African women, have an important and integral role in the liberation struggle, will champion that struggle, will say, you know what, brothers, I just want to bring something to the table. Women don't even have to be present in the discussion. Group of brothers get together, you know what I'm saying? I want to bring something to the table. This question of what's happening to our babies in these communities at the hands of these black men who, you know, haven't come into consciousness and who do really corrupt things to African women and children, we have to take a position on that.
Right.
And they'll hear it differently coming from a sister than they will from a sister.
Mm-hmm.
Can I share something, please?
Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to share something that the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad said. My mother shared this with me and my parents back in the 50s. She said that the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that at one time they would give us, you would see the American Negro on television or the black man and woman on television, and they're going to give us all these TV shows. At that time, they couldn't see that then because of back in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. But now I understand, and I'm saying this to say that all of our problems, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan taught us, all of our problems are socially engineered. Come into the area, come into each community, count the liquor stores, count the fast food restaurants, okay? Count all this in our area. Count all the bad foods. You're studying, you have people now, I was reading the final call, who are protesting against Monsanto. My husband and I recently were blessed to go to Rome. When we went to Rome, we were treated so badly by the Caucasians there. And when we went back to the hotel, we started watching television. And they were showing Scandal and Martin Lawrence and all of these ignorant shows, and they portraying us. Because I think by the grace of Allah, my husband and I, he has blessed me that we travel. So all around the world, we are being shown as idiots, prostitutes, foul mouth, loud. We don't have the money to run media like that. So somebody wicked in high position. What is it saying in the Bible? We war not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and the rulers. I'm not saying it correctly, but you understand what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to have a God on the scene that has to fight our battles. Dick Gregory said something. He said he made mention of this, and I'm mentioning him because my daughter opened up for him one time, and he came and spoke. But recently he said something, and I investigated this, and I went to Google, and I looked up this article that the Sun Times in Europe put out and said that the FBI knew that they had linked high crimes in our area and black urban areas to pollution, polluted water. That in the area that there was high crime. One time in our area, there was, over the weekend, I think it was about 7 or 8 people that were killed around a 7-Eleven. Then they were talking about how the police are spraying, I heard about manganese in our areas. And they said if you spray manganese in the area, put it in the water, you will kill you. All of us will be in here fighting. And then we would look and say, look at these black folks fighting. They can't get along. But who put something in our water? Who sprays something in the air? So I'm just saying on every level, there's an enemy that's making sure that we don't get along.
Right.
I have videos. You see these twerking videos, but I'm a mother. I have 6 children. I homeschool my children. And I have these videos on YouTube, you'll find, under Youth Creation called Supreme Wisdom. And my little children are reciting high wisdom. This has been out for over a year. It's not getting high ratings like the twerking videos that someone is getting 1 million hits. Why? Because daily we are edited. It's like daily you have this crap on television. And now you see the children, now you watch them, they're docile, they're weak. I think Dr. Is a black psychologist said that we were in like a somnambulistic state. Like insomnia, we walking around dead because of the food.
Right.
So I'm just saying on all levels, somebody wicked is fighting us on every level. Look at the chemtrails. What's in that stuff that's coming down? I don't want to just take up the whole program and talk. I just wanted to share that social engineering on every level.
Yes, ma'am.
On level.
Right, right. Well, that's what this show is for. Whatever, you know, we're sharing the knowledge and information that we have. So, you know, that's what this is for. And I just wanted to ask you, Sister Iyapo, you mentioned about, you know, the self-hatred that we have is, you know, black men, black women, black, you know, in our black community, period. But, you know, black women, when, I know when I first heard it, you know, hate myself, I don't hate myself. But if you could you elaborate a little more and just, you know, on ways that show that we don't love ourselves and, you know, the way that we should?
Well, I mean, I think if every black woman is honest, I mean, genuinely honest, maybe not in public but with herself, every single black woman in this country has experienced at one period or another, you know, this question of self-hatred. I remember as vividly as I'm sitting here right now, when I was a little girl, me and my sister used to take white towels and put them on our head and swing them around and pretend they were our long flowing hair. You know what I'm saying? Or, you know, and as a child, you don't internalize it that deeply, but that in and of itself is an expression of hatred for what we have. It's something that we were born with is somehow innately less than what we see as being promoted as beautiful on television. And you see it in 1,000 different ways. The other thing that you see happening greatly is, this competition for okay, so I have a theory. I want y'all to work with me for a second. It's just a part of a theory, but I have this position that in the last 30 years or so, since, you know, supposedly we had all arrived after the Civil Rights Movement and stuff, that supposedly everything was cool now, right? And
right.
So with integration, with the forcible removal of our children into hostile territory called public white schools, you started to see a real serious manifestation of self-hatred when African girls were now in competition with white girls, and you see it even more now with mixed race relationships being pushed so heavily in the media. And so now, back when my parents were growing up and my grandparents were growing up, you know, a virtuous African woman was a prize, was a gem, right? And most women, it wasn't the norm for black women. I remember this even growing up in my generation. I'm 38 years old. Black girls didn't put out. You know, black girl, that wasn't something that a brother would even try, because it was just a known fact. The black girls did not put out. All black girls were waiting until they were married, right?
Right.
And in a couple of generations, you've seen a complete destabilization of the morals that existed in our communities. And I really feel like a lot of that came when, you know, when I was a kid, when I was in high school, you know, it was just a known fact that if you wanted, you know, if you were a boy and you wanted, you know, to have a little fun, you were going to have to seek that out with the white girl. Now, you wouldn't make the white girl your girlfriend. You know, you had your boo who was a sister, but she wasn't doing nothing for you. So, you know, on the side, you had the white girl that was going to do something for you. Well,
yeah.
With that mentality, all of a sudden, just a generation later, it's acceptable for the little brother to make the white girl who's putting out his main squeeze, right, his boo now. It's acceptable for him to have the white girl on his arm. And so now you have created this air of competition for black men between white girls and African girls. Well, if African girls, African women are, you know, the most atrocious thing, you know, in the country, have the media tell her, then what is it that she has to compete with? And the only thing that she and her young mind can see that she has to compete with the white girl is to have sex before she's ready, is to put out. And now, you know, because the white girl is putting out and the black girl is putting out, but the white girl is still better, all the African girl is good for is, you know, is to be able to, you know, freak with, in the dark, but still the brother's gone. And I see it heavily in Florida. I don't know how it is anywhere else, but in Florida it is a serious, serious, serious crisis. And these young girls are putting out younger and younger, looking for any semblance of some kind of affection coming from the opposite sex. And it may come from a variety of areas. It might not just be the competition for men in general. I mean, it might be the fact that we talked about, the fact that 1 in 3 women will be raped or molested in her lifetime. And that always, just from a psychological standpoint, you know, in terms of where my background is, you know, that is the primary expression of sexual abuse of young girls is sexual promiscuity in their adolescent years. It almost always goes hand in hand. If a young girl is having sex at 12, 13, 14 years old, 90% of the time she's been molested as a youth, right?
Yeah.
And right. So it's really easy for us to just look at the symptoms, which is girls putting out too young and having babies too young, and not really shine the light on the origin of the problem. That was just something I was thinking about. The other thing I was thinking about is, you know, this society needs African women to be silent, because historically African women, and even old people would talk about it, African women have been the backbone of the entire community. When white people were, you know, attacking African men in mass, lynching African men in mass in the southern states by the thousands, it was incarcerating African men, you know, by the thousands. It was African women that were always maintained the ability to hold the community together under the worst kind of circumstances. And it wasn't until the Reagan administration and the imposition of the drug economy on our communities that you saw that rock begin to be destabilized. When crack cocaine was imposed on African communities, it was the first time in history that you saw African women in mass using drugs. Even in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s, where drug use had become popular, especially among cultural workers like musicians and stuff, it was always African men that were using drugs. Heroin was a big drug for African men. But you never saw in mass African women, you know, destabilized the way that they were with the imposition of crack cocaine into our communities. And it's been the most effective strategy that our enemy has had is to attack the African woman, who has always been the primary stronghold in the community. And I think you can't say enough about that.
I mean, you said a mouthful, and I just want to pause. No. Please don't apologize. Again, it's good. You know, this is what this is for, and, you know, I don't have all the insight. You know, I just want to put the information out there, which is why I have you all on the show, so we can, you know, elaborate on these things and raise awareness on these things. Again, I personally do not have all this, you know, information. I don't know a lot of these things, but, you know, again, that's why we're here, so we can, you know, come together and share the information that we do have and get it out to the people. And I just wanted to pause really quick for the listening audience. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, that you can press 1, and you know, we'll pick you up in the queue and we'll have you. Sister Queen, do we have any questions now? Sister Queen, you there?
Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry. I had to unmute my phone. I apologize. Yes,
no problem.
I'm going to take a question from area code 314. Area code 314, your mic is live. Area code 314, going once, going twice. Okay, I guess they don't want to say anything. Okay, and we have a couple of questions from the chat room, Sophia Tira and Sister Lynn. She wants to ask Brother Khaled, how can black men turn the condition of black women around? We have to work hand in hand. What is the responsibility and the role of the black man to secure the black woman?
Well, first of all, you know what I'm saying, he had to know his position, you know what I'm saying? It's a difference between boys and men. Just because you can be of age of an elder doesn't necessarily make you grown. First of all, you know what I'm saying, he had to come to realization with himself, you know what I'm saying, learn how to be a man, you know what I'm saying, take the, you know, at least when he talks, you know what I'm saying, take the profanity out of his mouth, pull up his pants, acknowledge himself for who he is at all times, his surroundings, because, I mean, he had to realize that his woman is a reflection of him. You know what I'm saying? When he's not there, though, when she goes out to the community, though, if they'll see him and her at the same time, you know what I'm saying, and stuff like that. It's so many things. I mean, like I said, and if they have kids, I mean, they're not in the consciousness, though, if they, you know, take that willing, you know what I'm saying, crossover, you know what I'm saying, baby, to come into consciousness, he has to, you know what I'm saying, learn that, you know, as babies, everybody going to get this all at the same time. But, you know, you got to, sometimes before you get the meat, you got to get the milk, you know what I'm saying, at certain times and stuff like that. So he has to let her come into her own, realize that she will make mistakes and not be harsh on her. But it also kind of depends on, too, you know, because a lot of us grew up, we come with baggage, so, you know what I'm saying, to that, though. So once we come into that, you know, to able to play those demons that we come into and stuff like that. I mean, it's going to be a constant struggle. Like I was telling sisters, you know, Ramadan, they say it's only, you know what I'm saying, it's 30 days, but Ramadan is basically every day, you know what I'm saying, 24 hours a day, even while you sleep, though, you know what I'm saying, Satan's busy, though, you know what I'm saying, you know, when it's Ram trying to do what he's trying to do, you know what I'm saying, to throw you off the square. So he had to constantly be a constant thinker. That's what he has to do. He has to, you know, he has to take responsibility for his actions and has to realize his mistakes. So if he's wrong, he's wrong. He has to admit that he's wrong. You know what I'm saying? And not be able to, and if he has to apologize, be able to, you know what I'm saying? Say, I apologize for that, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, I tell sisters, even though I don't know, I apologize for what you had to go through. You know what I'm saying? That, you know, whatever that brother took you through. You know what I'm saying? I apologize for him. You know what I'm saying? You know, and don't hold it against me or him. You know what I'm saying? You know, forgiveness play a key part, too. You know, because, you know, you're not, that's how you're not, you know, you'll miss out on a lot of things if that heart is blocked. You know what I'm saying? You know, heart disease don't necessarily mean, you know, this, I mean, don't have to be a medical condition. I mean, that you had to get surgery for. I mean, you know, some physical, you had to go see a doctor. You know what I'm saying? So, that plays a key part too, though. So, I mean, it's basically choosing your man, your mate, though. You know what I'm saying? Because, I mean, trash, you got trash, though. So whatever you put out, you attract. You know what I'm saying? And, you know what I'm saying? It's a lot of, you know what I'm saying? You pray to Allah for that, or if you're not Muslim, though, you know what I'm saying, you pray to whoever that you believe to, but you know what I'm saying, that you attract to what you're supposed to attract, so you know what I'm saying, you'll see the signs and symbols, you know, because it's for this conscious mind, and then you'll be able to determine for there, and then when you do, like you say, y'all pray to be to Allah, you know?
Yes, sir.
I hope they are. I hope I helped her out. I hope I helped her out.
Oh, praise to Allah. And we have a question for Sister Veronica. She says to the sister who homeschooled her children, I think she's talking to you, Sister Sudan, she said, what about those of us who do not have the luxury of homeschooling? How do we best protect our children from the negative stereotypes displayed on TV and in all social media these days?
Well, you know what? If you, you know, and I'm thankful to Allah that I'm blessed to homeschool and surround myself with other sisters in programs or, you know, people that's homeschooling their children. When your children come home, you have to debrief them. You really have to sit down and talk to them and ask them, how was your day? What did you learn? What happened? And really listen. And then, as a mother, you have to sit down and really school starts at the dinner table. The real school is at the dinner table.
You're right. You're right.
May I add something to that?
Yes, I just wanted to say, you know, that being when I was younger, you know, my mother, I was in homeschool, you know, I went to public schools, but one of her questions, she mentioned, you know, the TV and the things that are on the TV. I mean, my mom was a stickler with television. We could be in the room watching TV. We would think she's sleeping or whatever. And if we changed the channels, I mean, she's in there. She was constantly, whether she was checking on us or you know, asking us what we were watching, whatever the case may be, she was always checking on us and, you know, she, constantly. No matter what time of the day it was, it could be afternoon where there's nothing but cartoons is on. She was always sticking her head inside of the, you know, sticking her head inside of the room, seeing what we're watching. So she monitored things, and if there was anything on that we shouldn't be watching, you know, she corrected it. And, you know, if it was something that we knew we shouldn't be watching, you know, she turned it off, and we weren't allowed to watch TV, point blank, period. But I just, something that I see in a lot of, you know, right now is, you know, there's just no monitoring of anything, you know. Whatever we want to listen to, and that was another thing, radio, you know, we hardly could listen to the radio. If we turned it on and if something inappropriate was on, instead of her changing the channel, no, she just turned it off and it was just no radio. So, you know, we went outside a lot. We played outside all the time. You know, when we came home, we didn't eat at the dinner. I mean, we didn't sit in different rooms or sit in front of the TV while we ate. No, just like you said, we sat down and we had dinner together and we talked. And then, you know, next to that, again, like I said, you know, it just, everything was monitored. It wasn't just, all right, I know you got to go, you got to go to school. I'm sending you off to school. And when you come home, I'm sending you off in front of the TV. And whatever you do is just your business. And I'm just going to pray that you turn out the best. No, she, you know, she instilled morals and principles in us at a young age. And she was, my mom, she worked hard. She's a working mother. And, I mean, when I think about it, I can't even say that I recall you know, I don't see her a lot in my memory. Though I know she was there, I just don't see her a lot. But here I am today with these principles and morals instilled in me, you know, because I can always hear her. You know, she was always teaching and training, but she was at work a lot of her time. So I just wanted to add an in there that, you know, we can't allow, you know, I don't have any children, but when I do have them, I won't allow, you know, the TV, the media, the radio, you know, and others to raise them, you know, point blank period. So I just wanted to add that on what you were saying.
Can I say something? I watch television with my children sometimes, and they say, mm-hmm. Mom, can I watch this program? And when I watch it with them, I ask them, like my father used to ask me, what did you get out of that?
Mm.
What did you see in it? And sometimes my children, because I've listened to the minister and he said use the lessons as a filter for this world, they will be able to go into with me the technology that they saw, the tricks, the lies, the deception, and say, Mom, wow, this show really teaches you how to disrespect your parents. I said, well, is this a show that you think you should watch? Because I believe in power of influence, but I want to empower my children. I don't want to be suppressive, but I want them to see, to come to some conclusions of their own. But what do you think about this? And I'm hoping that they make the right decision, you know. But I share with my children and I talk to them. And, you know, I always want to keep the lines of communication open.
Right.
So that's just important. And I like what your mother, you know, what you share with us, what your mother, you know, has done with you all.
I think it's really important. Because, and I really appreciate what Sister Sandra just said, because, you know, I haven't had cable in my house in about 8 years, and I like TV, you know what I mean? I'm not even going to front. I like TV, but I also know that there is just a barrage of foolishness that exists on TV that I don't even want in my house. So instead, we're big movie watchers. I buy movies. I hosted the radio show for 5 years. The radio show was Colonialism is Bad for Your Health. And one of the things that I mentioned it because one of the things that I ended up doing to, you know, gather a lot of information about topics was to start buying documentaries. So just in preparation for doing my own show, if a caller would call in and say, well, you know, I'd really like to hear about AIDS in Africa, instead of trying to do a whole lot of reading about AIDS in Africa, I would buy a documentary on AIDS in Africa, you know, write down all the, you know, all the people who spoke about AIDS in Africa and then call them or email them and see if they'd let me interview them on my show. So in doing that show, I started collecting documentaries, and initially they were just for me doing the show, but then I started really understanding how something well-researched, like a documentary, can take a lot of the study, it can cut your study time in half. And so now I have about, I don't know, maybe about 150, 175 documentaries at the house, and we have regular movies too, but I frequently sit my kids down to watch documentaries. All right, today we gonna watch, you know, whatever. You know, whatever the documentary is, today that's what we gonna watch. But the other thing is so important what the sister said about teaching your children how to read between the lines of modern media. It is so proliferated with information that is meant to create a worldview that is hostile to your own interests, right? So this, let me repeat that. Everything that comes out of mainstream media, everything that comes out of mainstream media is created and proliferated with messages that are hostile to the interests of African people. all the time. There is nothing that's benign. There's nothing that's innocent. Every single thing is proliferated with these images and these messages, these subliminal messages, that make Africans not want to struggle, that make Africans want to be complacent. So it's funny because I just did a write-up on The Pursuit of Happiness. Y'all saw that movie, The Pursuit of Happiness?
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you are not equipped to look at movies in a certain kind of way, and there's nobody out there giving you an adequate analysis of what it is you just saw, then you'll look at a movie and only see it for its entertainment value. Oh, you shed a tear. Oh, that was so sad. They were sleeping in the train station. And you didn't even get from it what you were supposed to get from it. Not what they wanted you to get from it, but what you were supposed to get from it, right?
Right.
That movie is the epitome of the discussion that we are having today. This whole question, this whole notion of this hatred for African women, man, the only antagonist in the whole movie is the African woman, the black woman who left her husband and left her baby, right? And you're supposed to be angry with the African woman. Anyway, it was just interesting because a lot of people, I did a whole analysis of the movie that I put forward on, you know, online, and people were like, you know, Iyapo is so right. I didn't even think about it that way. But the guy was put forward as somehow extraordinary for overcoming all these obstacles and taking care of his son in the process. But African went, he didn't do anything extraordinary. He did exactly what he was supposed to do as a father of a son. And African women do those kinds of things and more every day, but are not put forward as some kind of extraordinary champion hero who was pursuing happiness or whatever was being put forward in that movie. I think it's important because African children have to become critical thinkers. If we are going to change our society and change our circumstances, every single thing that we do, every single day, we have to have the ability to train our young people to be critical thinkers.
Right. I think that is so key, and I agree with you.
Ma'am? I said, because they are not getting that in school, by the way.
Oh, of course not. Of course not.
And you know, it's powerful that you said that because Brother Tom, I heard those books.
Okay, hold on a minute, because I'm getting some interference. Hold on. Okay. No, I just wanted to share something on that point because, you know, my children are, I'm not going to say they're old, but, you know, they're in their 30s now. And I remember when my son was 17, one of his friends was asking him about a television show. It might have been Martin or something like that. But all through their years of growing up in the house with me, my children never watched television. And that was not something that my husband and I did on purpose. It's just that we kept them so busy and so grounded in the work that needed to be done in the community that they didn't have time to watch television. They had a very, very heavy schedule from 7 in the morning to 8 o'clock at night. So by the time that they got home, they went to bed. My children never watched television. I think they watch television more now that they're adults than they ever did when they were children. But as they've grown older, my daughter, who is 28 years old, I just bought her a television about 2 months ago. She has lived on her own for 6 years, and she never had a television. Because she was like, what am I going to do with it, you know? And I told her, I said, well, look, you need to be informed. You need to look at the news or something, you know, because it was so quiet in her house. But you know, I just want parents to know that when it comes to social media, you have the power to control what comes into your household. You know, a television on or a television in the house is not a necessity. The only thing television has ever been good for in my household is the news, you know. you know, in case of an emergency or something we need to be informed about. And, yes, you know, we used to look at the minister's videos and things like that on the weekend, but a lot of times they were busy on the weekend, too. You have to involve your children in the realities of life because they're not going to necessarily get the truth from social media. They're going to get whatever the powers that we desire for them to have, but the truth about who they are, where we come from, the direction that society is going in, is in the streets, so to speak, or in society, being proactive in the community. We cannot allow social media to raise our children. And to the sister who says, you know, well, you know, she doesn't homeschool her children, and I agree with you, you have to debrief your children. You have to be interested in what they are studying, things that they've heard, who they're socializing with, what people are telling you, because there's peer pressure, there's negative influence, and you have to be proactive in the education of your children and realize that the school system is not designed to truly educate your children, and that education does not begin in an institution of learning. Education begins at home. And I just wanted to share that. And Sister Yatira, you have questions on the line whenever you're ready.
Yes, and before we get to the question, I believe Sister Sadan has something to say.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just saying the book, Critical Thinking. Brother Sean is a brother out here who had a school. He gave us these books, and it's on different levels, and these books are amazing. And he said the same thing that the sister just said, that they will never, ever show or give our children these tools so they can think outside the box. And my sister Zishi said something very powerful, keeping your children busy, because we were not allowed to watch television. And we had to sneak when I was growing up because my father said these shows are ignorant and it's designed to keep you ignorant. So we were not allowed to watch them. So they would, we had a bookshelf made into our wall, and we would have to write book reports on black history because my father said that people will run from religion, but you can always build a conversation on black history, teaching people who they are. So I just wanted to share that.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Sister Queen, we can go ahead with the question.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, we're going to take a question from area code 31, well, a lot of 314, so 314-651, your mic is live.
As-salamu alaykum.
Alaykum salam, sir.
Alaykum salam, Brother Kareem.
Kareem, I knew it.
How is everyone this evening?
Fine, by a lot.
I'm blessed.
Good to hear it. I've been listening in. First thing I want to say is, well, always, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I want to keep this short because you all are rolling, you know, and that's what I want to say is I have been thoroughly edified by everything that I've heard. I just wanted to weigh in on a couple of things real quickly. One, the very thing you're talking about is the media, the television. The Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad told us, this is how I was raised, because I'm a nation baby myself. And we were told, don't turn the television on unless it was something that was going to educate you. That's what we were told. In other words, we knew in advance what was coming on. As far as the rest of the, that's why it's called programming. It's designed to program us. And there's so many different levels. They call it, there was a book out called Subliminal Seduction. If you've never heard of it or read it, get
it. Yes, sir.
It's called Subliminal Seduction. And there are so many levels on which they program an individual using television programming, radio programming. The bottom line is that any tool that we have, because it can be used as a positive tool, we just can't count on the enemy, our enemy, to give us what we need using any of that media. That's why whatever media it is, we have to take it over. The other thing I wanted to say is this. that our struggle as a people is dependent upon the unity between the male and the female.
That's right.
There is no man without the male and the female in harmony. Just don't exist. I'm going to say it, there is no man. See, I'm not getting religious, but that's why in the Bible it says that God created Adam, male and female created he them. We got to be in harmony with one another. So, yes, yes, any type of abuse of the woman, of the female, is unacceptable. It is unacceptable. We're not going to. I mean, the sayings that we have, no nation can rise any higher than this woman, that's not a cliche.
Right.
When the Honorable Elijah Muhammad made the statement, and see, that's the beauty of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. He's taken the language, he took in the instructions of his leader and teacher and followed them to the letter. He told him, take what I'm teaching and put it up in that fine language of yours. The minister uses these words today. He says that 75% of the work is with the black woman.
That's right.
Very palatable. That's very palatable, and everybody can accept that.
Well,
I came up under the same leader and teacher he did, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And when the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said it out of his mouth, he said, this is the way he said it. Don't take offense. He said that the black woman is 75% of the problem. Why did he say that? Like that. He said it like that because of just the subject you all are talking about, the self-hatred that we all have. Not that she is the cause of what we're going through, but the fact that she has to be uplifted, liberated, so that we all can move forward. That's why he said it like that. Yom Elijah Muhammad, he no nonsense. He tell it to you, he didn't explain it. Do it or don't do it. He was famous
right.
for saying, take it or let it alone. So I just wanted to say again, like I said, everything I've heard tonight is, in my view, is right on point. The thing is that in all these conversations, in all these forums, we must come away with something that we can use in a practical manner. And my last point is this. I'm sure everybody on the line is familiar with Willie Lynch. I'm not interested in that debate. The bottom line is that I know Willie Lynch is real because of the evidence of what's going on in our community, the evidence of what's going on around the world with us as a people. The bottom
right.
line is he talked about keeping us divided and separated. He said the thing was to keep us divided and separated on all levels, the shorter against the taller, the lighter against the darker. And then he said, but the most important division to promote was the division between the man and the woman. We will not rise divided. As-salamu alaykum.
Allah, Brother Green. My praise is due to Allah. Oh, my goodness. He just speaks with so much power, and it's just, oh, my goodness. Not even that, but just what you're saying, everything that you're saying is just so true. Oh, my goodness. Brother Kareem, thank you.
All praise is due to Allah.
Yes, sir. Oh, my goodness.
I'm just going to listen now.
Oh, please. We discuss this every week, Brother Kareem. If you have anything to say, please don't hold back, because somebody needs to hear what you're saying. So,
yes, ma'am. Well, all things do to a lot. But like I said, I've been getting fed myself. So y'all continue. Please, don't stop. I'm going to be
and
right
I
here.
I have control of the mic, and Brother Kareem's mic is live, sister, you're here. So just feel free to call on him anytime you get ready.
That's right. That's why you're my sister. All things do to a lot. There's too much. You said so much. I just I can't even speak on everything. Yes, ma'am. Somebody has something to say?
Yeah, this is Sister Yafo. I wanted to, if I may, you know,
I don't know if people are familiar with Ashra Kwesi. You know, he's a historian, he and his wife, Maria Kwesi. But Maria Kwesi did a really great presentation that I want to encourage people, you know, both male and female. This is a discussion about African women in the struggle, but it is a discussion of African people, period. And I want to encourage people to purchase her presentation called Sisters in the Struggle, and it's a history of black female liberators, because it's so important. This loss of our history, you know, always excites us when we are able to understand where we come from. But even within the constructs of us being able to understand where we come from, a lot of the time African women's contributions in our liberation struggle historically fall by the wayside. So even though all of us are familiar with the champions of our movement of the 20th century, brothers like Marcus Garvey and Malcolm X and the Black Panther Party and Martin Luther King and Elijah Muhammad, we don't know the giants of the 20th century who were African women whose contributions were equally profound. You know, we don't know about Mary Ellen Pleasant. You know, we talk about Harriet Tubman, you know, in a kind of like casual way. Oh, yeah, Harriet Tubman and, you know, the Underground Railroad. But we don't know the significance of what this woman did, right? We don't know how many giants, Fannie Lou Hamer and Ella Baker and all of these women who made massive, profound contributions to the movement, and we're not as well versed in who they are as we are in our brothers who have made these contributions to our movement. And as African women, it is a responsibility of ours to study. But as African men, it is a responsibility to equally study the history of African women and African men. And this particular documentary, Sisters in the Struggle, a tribute to black female liberators, talks about African women going far back to 2,000 years ago who have made massive contributions to the liberation struggles of African people since foreign invaders started attacking Africa. And so it's a really great compilation in a very concise format that helps us, you know, understand where we come from as women and what our contributions have been and what our responsibility is going into the future. Because the other thing about knowing who you are, the other thing about knowledge of self, is once you know who you are, there is a conviction that comes with knowing who you are. Once you know who you are, you have a responsibility. Now you can't say, well, I didn't know no better. You can't say, well, I didn't know, and that's why I didn't do X, Y, and Z. But once you know, it's the biggest, you know, it's our burden. Once we become conscious, we have a responsibility to change the world. We have to fight all the time until the day we die to make the world a place that our offspring will be proud to call theirs and be proud to hold us up. And, you know, I feel like, you know, those of us who know better have to, you know, have a massive responsibility. The other thing I want to say before we go on is, you know, in regards to this discussion, is there are some books that we can start with. There's scores and scores of books. But there are some books, I'm actually in school right now, but I'm still reading like three books on the side that are not school related. and it's because I'm really moved by this particular issue. One is called Black Women in White America, a documentary history. And that one is really good. This one is not pertaining to African women, but I really resonated with this book. It is called The Women of Vietnam. It's out of print, but you can still purchase it from, like, independent, you know, independent distributors. But it was published a year after the Vietnamese won their struggle against the United States. The book is called The Women of Vietnam, and it is actually a historical documentation of the struggles of the Vietnamese women under several oppressive regimes from China, Japan, France, and then lastly the United States. A great, great, great book. And then lastly, which is the one that I would like to read something from if we have some time in the show sometime, it's called Too Heavy a Load, Black Women in Defense of Themselves from 1894 to 1994. This is a phenomenal book because it talks about a number of movements that have emerged throughout the last 100 years and women's roles within those movements and in those organizations, struggles that came out of that work, the victories that have come out of that work, and the failures of a lot of that work. So it's a really great book, and, you know, it's really powerful. And at some juncture, you can tell me if I have time to read, you know, a short excerpt from the book, but there is something here that I thought was really significant for this discussion.
Yes, ma'am. I think Sister Queen, do we have any questions?
No, ma'am, not at this time, Queen. I'm just addressing some stuff in the chat room, but no, ma'am.
Okay, yes, ma'am. We'll go, Sister Yapo, I think it's the perfect time right now.
Okay. So this book is called Too Heavy a Load, Black Women in Defense of Themselves, right? And this particular chapter is talking about making, the title of the chapter is Making a Way Out of No Way. It was talking about a lot of the sister was saying earlier about constructs, and this is talking about like the force, like social programs that were really, you know, parading themselves as health programs that were, you know, like programs that were for, population control, sterilization programs, and things of that nature. But it goes on to talk about how the image of the African woman began to be transformed from the 1920s through the 1960s. So just bear with me. I'm going to read very quickly. Sadly, many of the words and ideas of black nationalism were misogynist. This is talking about the black revolution of the 60s. And so it said that the misogyny had been in the making at least since Frantz Fanon, since Frazier's critique of black middle-class women and Moynihan's matriarchy thesis. African-American men, from Black Panther Eldridge Cleaver and sociologist Calvin Hurton to psychiatrist William Greer and Price Cobb to the ideologue Frantz Fanon, accused black women of harming and holding back the race. Hurton, for example, now these are all African men. Hurton, for example, explored the black female history and concluded it to have produced in her a sort of studism, right, which expressed itself in a strong matriarchal drive. The black woman, this was a quote, the black woman could be expected to be too dominating, too demanding, too strict, too inconsiderate, and too masculine, said Hurton. Because her history of being alone and unprotected had produced in her a rigidity and a quality of austerity. Hurton was joined by Greer and Cobb, who traced these defects in black women to the black woman's self-hatred. She, this is a quote, she is the antithesis of American beauty, explained the two psychiatrists. Now, these are two African men, supposed to be conscious African men who were, ideologues of the black power movement of the 60s, who had explained that the problem with black women was they were self-loathing and they were the antithesis of American beauty. Depreciated by her own kind, judged grotesque by her society, and valued only as a sexually laboring animal, I will read that again, depreciated by her own kind. Judge grotesque society that valued only as a sexually convenient laboring animal. The black girl, they reasoned, had the cards stacked against her as far as the achievement of health, of a healthy, mature womanhood. The failure of the black female to develop a healthy narcissism in girlhood caused her later in life to neglect her figure, allow herself to become obese, concern herself more with the utility of clothing and less with the style of clothing, and resign herself to the asexual maternal role in which work and a hovering concern for the family occupied her entirely. According to the argument, the black woman's concern with family was emasculating because black women were all too good at preparing their black boys for a manhood that demanded they curb their aggressiveness, mute their assertiveness, and accept a subordinate place in the world. And then the other thing that they say quickly is that this put black women in league with white men in their attempt to destroy black men, or so the critique went. This was not a white Southern Republican racist that wrote this. These were black conscious sociologists and psychiatrists and ideologists who had basically began to transform what Garvey. Because the whole book comes from this place of how African women had a certain place in the movement and how over the years our place in the movement has digressed is what this whole book is kind of getting to. And she points out earlier in the book how, you know, Garvey, you know, actively sought African women leadership within the organizations of the UNIA, recognizing the significance of African women's leadership and also ability to get work done. Garvey said, if you want to get something done, give the work to a woman, because men are the talkers and women are the doers. That's what Garvey said. And so fast forward a couple of decades from the Garvey movement and the esteem that African women had, you know, rightfully earned within the UNIA, and you fast forward to the Black Power Movement, which was supposed to be a collective movement of African men and women working together to, you know, to take our struggle a leap forward, that these were some of the men that were the leaders, the ideological leaders of the, you know, of the movement, had these same kind of backward ideas about African women. And you know, somehow now the white man was not responsible for why everything was messed up for African men economically and what have you. Now the problem was African women being too loud and too assertive and too demanding or what have you. And now fast forward another 50 years from the Black Power Movement and you see the manifestation of these conversations that happened 45, 50 years ago. Right. I mean, that paragraph that I just read is what we see happening right before our eyes, but without a historical analysis, without a base from which we understand what is happening to young African boys who are calling themselves homosexual, or, you know, young African girls who are becoming studs. Well, all of these things have their origin in unresolved issues of our own movement.
Yes, ma'am. And if I just wanted to add on to what you're saying now is something that that Brother Kareem mentioned. I'm just, you know, for the most part, the way society is today, you know, is completely opposite on how it was before. And, you know, you mentioned earlier, you know, in your words, you know, putting out, for example, something that is, you know, it's normal, you know, now, but it wouldn't be so normal, back in the day. And that, as long as, you know, the dress today is not the modest dress that it was years ago. The food that we eat today is not the way, you know, home-cooked meals, dinners at the table together is not what it is today, grab and go here and there. And it's just the same thing with the, you know, with what he was saying, Brother Kareem mentioned earlier, with the division of the men and women, how it is today is not how it was then. And it's like, of course, you know, there's not going to be perfection in any type of relationship, you know, husband and wife, you know, whatever the relationship status is, you know, but what has happened, you know, like you just said, there's a historical origin. There's something that happened to produce the results of today. And, you know, the boss, I can't remember what you said word for word, but just, you know, the list off of how they portrayed the black woman. She's boisterous, she's loud, she's this and that. And something earlier was mentioned about, you know, the submission of women. But if you have to look at everything else, and if right now everything is the way it is and it was completely opposite, that's something that you have to consider and say why, you know, what took place. Because once upon a time, us black women were not this, you know, we were forced to be this. You know, by nature we are submissive. You know, we want to be submissive, but, you know, we watched our brothers, our husbands, our, you know, our family members. We had to stand there and watch them, you know, be mutilated, be killed, be ripped apart, and that instilled the fear in us, and we instilled that fear in our children, and it's just a cycle. And eventually, you know, over centuries, you know, what do you expect to happen? Now she realizes that, you know, she has to be strong. You know, she's not going to be as physically strong as the man, but mentally, all right, well, I got to just get these things done. I have to make the necessary sacrifices to make these things happen, make these moves. And, you know, by all means, you know, point blank, period. And, again, it wasn't always like that. So we have to, you know, look at what we're facing today is not what it always has been, but we have to look at the root of it. Why is it like that? What is, you know, what is it that's different? What was the changing factor? And I just wanted to add that on there.
Between any questions, I just want to, you know, stay up to date with the questions and comments coming from our audience. You know.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead. I've been answering their questions. I don't have anybody online, but I'm trying to keep up with these people in the chat room. But go ahead and continue, sister. And if anyone has a question on the phone line, please press 1. On your dial pad, and we'll take your questions. But go ahead and proceed, sister.
Yes, ma'am. Sister Dawn, I wanted to ask you, did you have something to say? There's some interference. I can't tell if somebody's trying to speak or if it's just interference. Okay.
Would you ask for me?
Sister Sadan, yeah, I wanted to ask you, what does a nation can rise no higher than its woman mean to you?
Well, I wanted to say, you know, I thank Allah for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and I remember him, Savior's Day. I think it was Savior's Day, 1989, and he started crying, thinking and talking about the black woman, and said, "Don't tell me the black woman is not a suffering woman." And I heard him one time when he came to Union Temple. He heard the women praising Jesus at Union Temple Church, and he started crying. And he said he felt the pain of the black women in the audience. And because the nation could rise no higher than its women, and the minister, through the FOY class, is making men who honor and respect the women, I have to say I thank Allah for my husband. I thank Allah for my husband. I thank Allah for my husband. FOY class made a man. He respects. He's honest, he's a hard worker, and he believes that a nation can rise so higher than his women. And where there are no decent women, there are no decent men. Proverbs 10 is something that we studied in MGT class, and I have to go back again. If a nation can rise no higher than his women, and we are in this condition, then we have to go back to a classroom and be educated.
Right.
MGT class, what is the meaning of MGT and GGC? Muslim girls in training and general civilization class. If I didn't have that class, I wouldn't have 5 harpies in my house. I wouldn't have daughters who could stand and who have played for doctors and lawyers and all kind of famous people, whoever you want to say, because in the lessons, if a nation can rise no higher than this woman, Master Farah Muhammad asked the Honorable Elijah Muhammad a question. He said, what is the meaning of civilization? And then he asked, what was the duty of a civilized person? And then the question was asked, if a civilized person fails to perform his duty, what must be done?
Come on.
See, all this goes into line to what the God that came to raise us up. That's all the condition that we're in. But if we don't take the medicine and if we don't take what's given to us, then we're all going to suffer. We're going to go down with this world. So I hope, I pray to Allah that I answered, or I answered the question on that you just asked me about a nation rising no higher than this woman.
I'm
rising above conditions in our community. I am rising. People ask me, how did you get your children to act this way? We were out in a restaurant in Miami, in a Marriott. An older white Jewish guy came to me and said, I have never seen children just disciplined at a table. People tell me that they stopped me. I have never seen children this disciplined. Yes, ma'am. No, sir. Islam. I'm allowed to teach my children. Civilization. I'm allowed to teach especially my daughters. I was given, why was I given 5 daughters? What is she doing? So I'm just so full and I'm just so happy. I think Allah came the person of Master Farah Muhammad, the one to whom all holy praise is due forever and ever. And he raised the man up, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, that last messenger and exalted Christ. And he left us not comfortless with the honorable minister, Louis Farrakhan, and he gave us the answer to the problem. We have the answer.
Man, we do.
Look at black women. Look at Sister Ava Muhammad. Look at Minister Donna Farrakhan. These are my daughter's heroes. Mother Tarnetta, she's always uplifting a black woman. When I read her articles, I go back and I study Isis and Osiris. She talked about the matriarch and a woman who she was. Minister Ava Muhammad, she's a lioness. So I'm just thankful. And that's all I wanted to say.
Yes, ma'am. My praise is due to Allah. Thank you for that. And I just want to add on to what you say in 100% agreement that, you know, for me, you know, also, just in terms of people hearing that for the first time, you know, whether you be a, you know, male or female, that a nation can rise no higher than its woman, you know, especially in today's society, you can only imagine the, you know, the responses, the reaction that you may get. But when you think about it, when you really think about a nation not being able to rise any higher than its woman, you know, what came to my mind, what comes to my mind is, you know, for the brothers who are still out running the streets, who are out, you know, trying to chase any female that will give it to him, what if not one female, not one black woman would lay down with you without setting requirements, without making you have to marry me, you have to be able to take care of me, you have to love God, you have to have a relationship with God, you know, in order for you to lead me and a family that we may produce or things of that nature. If every woman had that mindset, what choice does the black man have? What choice does he have if every single woman is saying, I'm not going to just, you know, you can't just buy me a car. You can't just throw some cash my way and, you know, I'm going to lay down with you and call it a day. You know, if every single black woman, every woman did that, what choice does a black man have? I highly doubt that a real man, you know, a straight man, what option do you have? You're going to straighten up and you're going to meet those requirements. I mean, you're going to go crazy. I don't know what other option you have if every woman just, you know, sets those goals and standards. So, you know, it's not nothing spooky to say that a nation cannot rise any higher than its woman, because again, men move based off of, you know, what the woman is going to do. Just like, you know, the example that was given with, you know, back in the day, black women weren't giving it up. So he has to move around, and he moved around in a way where he had to go find it elsewhere, but eventually, because of, you know, society, and she wants to be with him or whatever, that's what happened. I'm losing my train of thought. I'm just so passionate about that. But if he wants her and she's not going to give it up, I mean, what else is he going to do? If every single woman did that, you know, and I just wanted to, you know, say that, yes. I wanted to ask you, Brother Khalid, one long time, but Brother Khalid, for you, you know, what does that mean to you as a man, that a nation cannot rise any higher than its woman? You still on?
I said I had to agree with you on that realization of what you said. You said everyone, you know what I'm saying, woman knows her self-worth, you know what I'm saying, put down those type of standards and, you know what I'm saying, and live by that, you know what I'm saying, not just for that one time, you know, because you can just say that, you know what I'm saying, and then, you know, you get up the next day and you go back to doing, you know, worldly things. So you have to, you know what I'm saying, stand on those type of things. But, yeah, like you said, if the woman did do that, it would be a real big change going on that you would see out here in society, especially in public. Like you said, it would be a lot more of that. Like the sister just said, when she was out and the people came up to her and addressed her, like, you know what I'm saying, how is this able to go on, you know what I'm saying? And when you see that together, then it'll be a beautiful thing. I mean, that's what needs to happen now. That's really like a sense of urgency now. That's what really needs to happen, though. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Tupac even said, he said, if it's that easy, I don't even want it. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, you know what I'm saying, there should be some type of restraint and stuff there. On her for that part. I mean, you know what I'm saying, a real man will respect her for that, though, you know what I'm saying, when that time frame comes for that. And that's what really needs to happen, though. I mean, because when you do things, you know, out of wedlock and things of that nature, though, you know what I'm saying, sin begot sin, so you got to try to break that cycle, you know what I'm saying, somewhere. Those generation curses have to be broke, you know what I'm saying, and why not start with yourself? Yeah.
Yes, sir. Thank you so for that, Brother Khalid. Brother Kareem, you know I want to ask you the same question. I know you're not a panelist, but, you know, you're on. I got to ask you.
Certainly. Go right ahead. So the question is, what does the statement,
yes,
no nation can rise any higher than this woman, mean to me?
Yes, sir.
Woo! Well, first of all, let me explain this. I have practical examples of that in my life. Number one being my mother, who is MGT and raised me. And as I have grown now to be a child of 54 years old, all praise is due to Allah, I look back on all the ups and the downs that I have experienced, and the downs, the majority of which I place myself in that position. However, it was the teaching of my mother. It was her example that allowed me to survive, and then not only to survive, but also thrive and literally thrive in some of the worst conditions. What that statement means to me is the fact that, as we're taught, the woman is the first teacher. The woman is the first teacher. I mean, that's just so real. As a matter of fact, if we truly understand it, when we come forth from our mother's womb, mother is first, the first God. She's the first God. Who else is there? I mean, even though daddy may be in the home, we are 100% dependent on mother. When we say that a nation can rise no higher than its woman or than its women, what it says to me is that anytime a male or a female devalues the woman, then it's like literally putting a gun to our head and pulling the trigger. What it means and what it says to me is that it is vital that the woman, particularly the black woman, understand who she is and whose she is, what she is, what her place is, what her responsibility is, and in that, accept nothing less than perfection. Now, I know some people say, well, no, ain't none of us perfect, ain't none of us perfect. I beg to differ. If we are not perfect or we couldn't reach perfection, why would we be told in the scripture, be ye perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect? If we can't achieve that, then when God is talking to the devil, quote unquote, about Job, why does he say, have you seen my perfect servant Job? See, because of how it's been given to us, we have a twisted concept of what certain things are, certain words mean. In this context, when I say perfection doesn't mean flawless. Perfection means that regardless of what the circumstance is, we are, or as a matter of fact, the worse the circumstance becomes, the more it pushes us to draw on the God within self. And see, that's the thing we have to understand. What it means to me is when it says that no a nation can rise no higher than its woman or than its women, it means that it is absolutely mandatory for the woman to see God, Allah, in herself, and it is absolutely mandatory for the black man to see God in her. It's vital that each of us understands our place and our role, get in position, and I hate the term play, but I mean this is the language we're using. And so we get in our position and play our position to the utmost. And in conclusion, I would say this. What it means to me is that as I think I mentioned earlier, we are not going anywhere without one another. We also have to accept, no matter how painful it is, we all have to accept whatever our contribution to our current detrimental condition is so that we can correct it. I don't care how ugly it sounds. We got to weigh it. We got to look it into self and say, well, is that true? Have I been guilty of that, or do I know individuals that have been guilty of that? And if it's something that detracts from us, I have to say, yes, I've been guilty of it. That's why we got the 8 steps of atonement. I mean, we got so many things, so many tools to use to bring ourselves up out of this condition. But we will never come out of the condition that we are in if we refuse to face ourselves, both the positive and the negative. So that's what it means to me. As-salamu alaykum.
I'll praise the Lord for Allah. And if we have time, do we have time for a brief response from Sister Yapo? Same question.
Hold on.
Hello?
Yes,
ma'am.
Okay.
According to the aims of the National Association of Colored Women at the turn of the century, they became the black woman's primary vehicle for race leadership. Its membership saw a set of interlocking problems involving race, gender, and poverty, no one which could be dealt with independently. They believed that if they could work for the poor, they worked for black women. They believed if they worked for black women, they worked for the race. Since in their minds a race could rise no higher than its women, they felt that when they improved the condition of the black woman, they necessarily automatically improved the condition of the whole group. when they spoke in defense of black women, they automatically spoke in defense of all black people. They talked about their work as race work and their problem as a race problem, because in their minds, the problems of the race revolved around the problems of its women. That when you uplift the woman, you automatically uplift the group. Because what do we do as African women? We raise our children, both male and female, to be responsible adults. And if the burden of providing the necessities, food, clothes, and shelter, the necessities of creating and recreating real life for young African people, if the burden is relieved through the resolution of the issues that African women are confronted with, then you automatically make the world better, because now our children have the capacity to understand love. You mentioned, one of the sisters mentioned earlier how even though her mom worked and provided, you know, moral code for them and raised them, that she didn't remember seeing her mom a lot. Well, that is a contradiction in and of itself, that a woman doesn't even have the capacity from providing the necessities to be with her children all the time, raising her children, caring for her children, providing for her children the example of what unconditional love looks like, you know, in the most intimate way with women and their children, because women have, you know, taken on largely responsibility of providing for their families. So I just feel like that is a really great passage, because it speaks to what that means. No woman, no nation can rise any higher than its women. That if you solve the problems of the women, you automatically solve the problems of the group.
Yes, ma'am. That was me earlier, and I just want to, you know, again, clarify. Like I said, Mom, I know she was there. I was strictly just saying my memory. You know, I can't, I don't remember a lot of things in my childhood. I can't see her on a day-to-day basis, though I know she was there on a day-to-day basis. But what I remember, you know, from the limited memory that I do have right now, is that she was there for this and she was there for that. Again, it's just an image.
I had the same experience. My mom was, you know, a single mom after my parents split up. But because she worked, even though she was with us, with us from day to day, that was relative. My mom worked 16 hours a day most days. So providing for us, you know, meant coming home, talking for 20 minutes, and then she's back to work again. Like, that's the way I understood it, because that's how my childhood was. My mom was always there, but she was always working. So the there was relative.
Yes, ma'am. Mr. Queen,
anyway, I appreciate the discussion. I think it was great.
Thank you. Thank you for being on and sharing your insight, your perspectives, and the knowledge that you shared with us all today. And I thank all of you for being panelists on the show tonight. Again, I really, really, really appreciate it. And Mr. Queen, are there any last? I know you're over there chatting away in the chat room.
They have kept me busy tonight. No, there are no more questions on the line, and that's the end of our broadcast. Unfortunately, we lost Sister Sadan. Her phone dropped, and so she's no longer on the line. But, of course, I want to give you an opportunity to close out. Sister is here if you like. And I just want to thank all of the panelists and Brother Kareem for jumping in there, and Brother Khaled, and, of course, you, Sister Yapo, for joining us tonight, a very enlightened discussion. I just wanted to thank you. So I'm going to let you close out, Sophia Tira.
Yes, ma'am. Did you? I don't want to go over the line of
Brother Kareem. Brother Kareem?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir. Would you be so gracious enough to close us out in prayer, please?
Certainly, I will. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. We seek refuge in Allah, God, against the accursed shaitan of Satan. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, all praise is due to Allah, the Lord of the world. the Magnificent, the Merciful, Master of the Day of Requital. Thee alone do we serve, and thine aid do we seek. O Allah, guide us on the straight path, the path of those upon whom thou hast bestowed favor, not on the path of those upon whom thy wrath is brought down, nor of those who go astray. Ameen.
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 All right.
Thank you all so much.
Wonderful job, Sister Yatira. So thank you all, and that's the end of our show. So assalamu alaikum, one nation, one love. Good night, y'all.
Good night. Thank you so much.